I think obviously getting everything better, irons, putting, chipping, that's obviously a given, but I feel like my short game is pretty much there. So just kind of trying to find little things there that I can improve on. But I think outside of that is course management, making decisions, just kind of learning a lot of how I can try to, manage my game and score the best I possibly can. Because, obviously it's so easy to just make the wrong decision or the wrong club choice. There's so much that goes into making the right choice and giving you the highest percentage chance of the best score.
This is the Tournament Code.
Appreciate you taking the time to join us today and know a little bit about you. Before we get going, obviously we have our PuttView books that are our sponsor, help keep the lights on. We have our opening tee shot, which is our trivia question. Jack, would you give that to us?
Who is the first player in major championship history to start their major career with 5 rounds in the 60s? And I'll let all three of y'all guess. And the only hint I'll give is it's in the last 5 years.
Colin Morikawa?
No, good guess though.
It's in the last 5 years.
Ludvig Åberg.
No.
What? Not it. That's insane. All right, I'm trying to think for the last 5 years. And they weren't a winner in that one,
They
were
did
they?
not win. Think the hint I'll get is during COVID. He did some damage. He got close in a couple.
That's within the last 5 years. I'm just thinking of people who might have made their debut.
I feel like Alex Trebek, like I have all the answers and just get to judge guessing.
Well,
I'm lost.
Do you guys want a hint?
One more hint then.
Ian
Yeah, sure.
and this player share an instructor.
A wolf?
It is Wolf.
Really?
Okay. That's a good pull. I did
That
not
was
know that
good.
one.
That was
I did not know
Wingfoot.
that.
That
Oh, that's
was Wingfoot.
It was Wingfoot and TPC Harding Park.
interesting. Okay, that's right. I forgot that he was in that one. So, speaking of Ian, you do obviously you play golf. That's why we have you here. Some people might not know about you. Tell us kind of where you are and what you're up to.
Well, pretty much play golf at Florida. I'm a senior, but right now I'm back home in Reno, Nevada, in the cold weather. I think it's probably about 28 degrees out right now, so it's a little cold to go outside and play golf, but luckily I have like a pretty good simulator in my garage that I'll use during the wintertime. But yeah.
Very cool. What kind of setup do you have in the garage and how, it's wintertime. How do you work with your instructor or practice over the winter?
It depends on the weather. I mean, right now it gets up to high of on a good day, maybe 50 to high 40s. So at that temperature, you can kind of go outside and hit balls, as long as there's not snow. Right now, I probably would be able to go out. So I'll probably go hit balls at the course that I practice at when I'm home, Wolf Run. But if it's too cold, I'll usually go in my garage and hit balls, and then I have a putting strip that's about 8 feet by probably 2 or 3 feet. I think it's probably 3 feet. And so I just can hit putts on that to kind of get fundamentals down. I also go to the putting greens, kind of same deal, depending on temperature. And yeah, and then I'm gonna see George Gankus. And I think on Wednesday, we're just gonna fly down to LA and see him. So yeah.
How'd you get hooked up with George Gankus, and how long have you been working with him?
I first kind of found him, or kind of my dad did, because we were kind of struggling with swing stuff. And then my dad was just kind of searching YouTube, just curious about stuff. And he found George on YouTube.
and he had always kind of struggled with back pain stuff with his golf. And so he kind of started messing around with some of George's stuff that he found on YouTube. And he was like, wow, like my back pain seems to have like disappeared, which is pretty interesting. So he started like saying, oh, you try this out. So he started like using some of his techniques through YouTube. And then after that, we went and saw him in person for the first time and really liked it a lot and got a lot out of it. So that's kind of how it started. And that was probably like 7 years ago or 8 years ago now. So been working with him for a while.
Where were you at, like swing wise and golf game wise, when you started working with him, and what kind of has changed for you?
Like, you know, at that time, I was a pretty, you know, I was a decent junior player. I was playing a lot of junior golf events. I wouldn't say I was like the best junior golfer. That's like guaranteed. You know, I was a solid player with like a lot of talent. And then, you know, I think when I started seeing George and then implementing his swing stuff, I saw a lot of improvements quickly and consistency as well. Because I felt like at that point before seeing him, I kind of hit a bit of a block. Like I was kind of hitting a ceiling, and like I was kind of getting like annoyed, you know, just playing bad golf eventually gets, you know, pretty demoralizing. And so then I saw him and then I started, you know, seeing some better results, and it kind of grew from there.
What was the main thing that you were struggling with whenever you were playing poorly?
I mean, you know, at that age, it was like a combination of like, you know, my attitude was shaky. You know, like I had at times temper tantrums on the course, you know, like being age like 12 and under, my dad would always like get upset if I like was throwing clubs or slamming clubs. But that was, and then, you know, also, I think I definitely struggle with some swing stuff, just, you know, like my ball striking consistency, hitting balls. Yeah. And then obviously I wasn't like, you know, I was 12, so I wasn't taking it as serious as I am now. Like, so, you know, that obviously you're going to get a lot better when you work harder at something. So, but yeah, I think, and then once I saw George, it also got me more excited when I started like, you know, seeing like I gained a couple miles per hour of club head speed and also started, you know, hitting the ball better and seeing better results.
So you would say George definitely kind of helped you like holistically with your golf game, not just specifically with the swing.
Yeah, I think he definitely did. I think it definitely was huge for keeping my motivation high with golf and also like giving me like excitement of, you know, starting to see the results that like I knew I could have. And so, yeah.
So once you started taking lessons from Gankus, getting better, scoring better, at what point did you start saying, you know, I'm pretty good at this, I want to play college golf, and how did your recruitment process go?
You know, when I first started playing golf at like 5, I had always wanted to play pro golf. Like, I would always, like, I saw my mom say it somewhere in like an interview, but she was saying that, you know, when I was like really, really little, like I always would say like I wanted to win the green jacket. So that was always like kind of my end goal, but like, you know, at that age, like, it's hard to see the path. So it seems pretty, you know, like far away. But yeah, I think I started playing some pretty good golf and, you know, winning some events, and then coaches start reaching out. You get like pamphlets that they send to like, you know, pretty much any like deep, you know, solid junior golfer. And then I went on a visit to UCLA. That was my first visit, and that was my freshman year. I liked UCLA, but kind of just didn't really work out with them. And then just, you know, obviously kept looking, and kind of randomly Long Beach State came on my radar because I got an email from them, and but they were never really on my radar. You know, I kind of was like, I never heard of this school. So I told my dad, and I was like, you know, the coach wants me to go on a visit. I don't really think I'm like interested. Like, I've never heard of this. And he's like, well, we should still go. Like, you know, you never know. So, and then also I was kind of talking to Illinois a little bit, like, you know, a bunch of schools. But I went to the visit at Long Beach, and I really liked the head coach, Michael Wilson, at the time. And also the weather was really good.
and the facilities were close by, and he gave me a good offer. So that it was very intriguing, and both my parents really liked it a lot for me. And I was like, yeah, I think it's a good option. And so kind of like waited about a month to just officially make my decision. And that's when like I committed to Long Beach.
I guess you're kind of interesting because you kind of went through this recruiting process twice with going to Long Beach State out of high school and then entering the portal to go to Florida. Could you talk about what made you want to go to Florida and become a Gator?
I think it was a couple things. You know, Long Beach was great. I really don't have any, you know, big complaints. Obviously, it was disappointing that the coach I committed to, Michael Wilson, he left after my freshman year. So my sophomore year, we didn't have a head coach for the fall, which was kind of wild. We had a assistant coach who like basically just graduated like the year before, and it was his first year at Long Beach. And then, so we were kind of just weird. But no, I still like really liked it a lot. It just kind of came down to the PGA Tour U. And so like to get high on that ranking, like you really need to have a good, strong schedule to compete with the other players. Because, you know, if I had stayed at Long Beach, I probably would have had to almost like win every tournament to like, you know, even be in the top five, which is a bit unrealistic. And so I just knew like I most likely had to leave. And so that was pretty much the only reason I decided to leave. And I mean, obviously, you know, what comes along with like a program like Florida is better facilities, you know, better amenities, really. Like, you know, dining hall is like athletes only, which is really cool. You know, you get like obviously better facilities, better access to courses, probably better coaching. You know, way more resources with like athletic program, like flying on like a private jet is, you know, something that probably won't happen at Long Beach. But so that's like something that came along, but it really came down to the PGA Tour U.
So yeah, just talk about, you know, for people who may not know the specifics, what PGA Tour is, what's at stake, and what you need to do to get that.
Yeah. So PGA Tour U is like a new program they implemented for college players for like a couple reasons, like to keep them in school, because it only comes into effect your senior year. That's really when they start like showing it. But basically your junior and senior year, so your last 2 years, every college, it's only college event, not like an amateur event. So the USAM, Western AM, those events don't count. Only college events or PGA Tour events. So only those type of events count for your ranking, and it starts your junior year. And so every event you play, you get like points, just like on Wagger. It's like the same. They use Wagger for the points, and they just do your point average. And so it's if you get the first place on PGA Tour U after your senior year, you go straight to the PGA Tour for a year, pretty much a year and a half, which is obviously massive for like, you know, a college player. And then the next 2 through 5 get Korn Ferry status, and they get status from like pretty much when you graduate, which is like the end of May or like early June till whenever the Korn Ferry season ends. And then 6 through 10 get like conditional Korn Ferry status. And then they also get PGA Tour America's full status. And then 11 through 25 get America's status as well. And so, yeah, obviously that's huge for college players, because to be able to get access to the tour for right away without doing Q school and stuff like that is pretty huge. And so, yeah, so that's pretty much how it works.
So this summer and fall, you got some experience being able to play on the PGA Tour. You played Barracuda and the Shriners. Could you just talk to us a little bit about those weeks and maybe how it was different than even upper-level elite amateur events?
There's definitely a lot that goes into it. I think, you know, so the first one I played was the Barracuda, which was pretty close to home. I actually was able to stay, like, sleep in my own bed, which was nice. But, you know, it's like a lot just more kind of, like, stuff going on. Like, you've got fans, obviously way more fans than like any college event. And then you've got like tour trucks there, and then like you go to the putting green and they've got hundreds of putters that, you know, they're enticing you to try and, you know, try. And then there's obviously like the media's there. There's a lot of like cameras and stuff. And then also like when you get there, you're like, oh man, like I remember watching like all these guys on TV when I was growing up. So like that's was really cool, you know. And then it was really cool. I got to play a couple practice rounds because I had actually never played the course, even though it was pretty close to my house, about 30, 40 minutes from my house. And I had a local caddy on the bag, but he actually was like kind of not local. He actually was like, I believe he's from Texas. And, but we were going to get a local caddy who knew the course pretty well, but he was eager to help and he was really good all week. But yeah, I mean, I think I knew like I had been playing some pretty good golf coming in, but obviously the anticipation of like playing in a PGA Tour event, especially my first one, was high. And I didn't really know that I was going to be playing it until pretty late because I had talked to the tournament director, Chris Hoff, quite a bit kind of after I had won the Southern Highlands Collegiate, which was in February. And he had said, you know, like, just keep playing good. We'll, you know, we'll have a spot for you. And so kind of as we got closer to the event, he didn't really like tell me much. He was like, I don't know yet who we're going to give the exemptions to. And so I signed up for the pre-qualifier for the Barracuda and I played in it and I ended up winning it. And so that was on Friday. And the tournament, obviously, like the first day is Monday to Sunday. And so then he calls me the next day on Saturday and he was like, hey, do you want to play in next week's PGA Tour event, the Barracuda? I was like, yeah. He was like, well, you don't have to play on the Monday now. So, and I was like, well, that's sweet. So I don't, maybe like me playing good in the pre-qualifier, it probably helped him make his decision. But yeah. And then obviously the week started and I had a lot of friends and family that came out, which was really cool, being close to home. And it was a really awesome week. Obviously a little different with Stableford. But yeah, that was I think that event helped me a lot for the Shriners, just having that experience. Because I felt a little more comfortable when I was at the Shriners. Kind of like felt a little bit more at ease, you know, walking around at like player dining and like, you know, feeling a little bit more like I belonged there. And I had the caddy I had at the Shriners, he was a PGA Tour caddy that has kind of been around the block. He caddied for Danny Lee and a couple other guys. And so I got hooked up with him through Coach Deacon because he coached at UNLV and also played there. And so he knows a lot of connections through Vegas. And so he was amazing, like, you know, having like a tour caddy, you see like so much, you know, difference and how much he can help. Like, cause you don't get a range finder. So that was also a, you know, a big change, using your yardage book. And so having him, you know, he does this, it's his job. So he knows what he's doing. He was walking stuff off. He knew wind directions at every time of the day, that we were playing. So he's like, you're teeing off 8, the wind's going to be coming out of the northwest. And then once we get to like the 10th hole, it's going to be 11. Wind's going to be coming out of the southeast now. It's going to flip. And so, and he's like, it's also going to be at 13 miles an hour. And so like he was so dialed in with stuff like that. And it was huge for like making me feel more comfortable and then also helping me play better. What was huge was kind of once I kind of made the cut at the Shriners, it kind of settled my nerves a little bit. It's the same at the Barracuda. Like, it kind of felt more free, like I've got really nothing to lose now. So I was really just kind of playing, you know, aggressive and just kind of trying to make birdies was the goal. And luckily I had like a pretty good amount of them at the Shriners and Barracuda. So yeah, it was really fun.
So you talked about like wanting to belong, and like how big is that for your confidence going into this spring season into professional golf, like knowing that you can compete on the PGA Tour and like even as an amateur you contended and played really well?
Yeah, it's really big for sure. You know, being able to see myself get, you know, a high finish like that at a PGA Tour event, and then like, you know, everyone finishes a round of golf and's like, man, like I could have had that shot and that shot. And so like before the week, finishing like 16th place would have seemed like unreal. And then like I finished 16th and I was like, oh man, like, you know, like round two, if I hadn't have like missed that chip and like made a stupid bogey there, like all of a sudden I'm like, you know, close to the lead. And it's like, wow, like, so like seeing that is very like, it's really cool to see. And that definitely helps me a lot. You know, I think like beginning of my junior year, or even beginning of college, like turning pro was quite daunting and scary, but like, I feel like, you know, I have a lot more confidence now and, you know, almost feel more like I'm ready to go and compete against those guys. Obviously doing it consistently is going to be the hard part. You know, because I know when I'm playing good, I can play against them and compete. It's just getting consistent results. And then, you know, when your bad weeks, like making those as good as possible is going to really be the difference. So, yeah.
So you talked about like after you finish your round, looking back at, you know, things you could have gotten more out of your round. Do you have a set process after rounds? Do you kind of call your coach? Do you look through stats? Like, what does that look like after a tournament or after a round for you?
Yeah, I'll usually look at stats. I like in college, Coach Deacon and Dudley will make us like do our stats after the round just so we see it. But like when I was younger, like my dad would always want me to like talk to him about what my mistakes were and like what I messed up on. So usually I try and think about, especially if it's like, you know, one of the first couple rounds and we still have rounds left, like thinking about maybe what I can do strategically different, or yeah, really strategically, or what, like what I think needs to maybe get a small tweak. 'Cause it's hard, you know, to really change or improve a part in your game mid event. So it's really mid tournament. It's strategic. What can I change? And then once I'm done with the tournament, that's when I would be like, okay, what can I improve? What was really good? And then you start to see trends of, you know, over tournaments, like, okay, well this spring or this fall, my driving has been bad and I need to pick that up, or my putting has been poor. And so, yeah, that's kind of the process.
So yeah, you got a big year coming up, finishing up PGA Tour, you hopefully playing PGA Tour, Korn Ferry Tour, whatever professional golf level you end up doing. Do you have any goals, hard set goals for this year? Or are you more of just the person that says, you know, I'm just going to go play the best I can and see what happens?
I think, you know, I obviously love to finish in the top five for PGA Tour U, but I wouldn't say I have any crazy hard set goals. I try to focus on, you know, kind of the current day and the process of getting better. I think, you know, especially this year, it's easy to get lost in the PGA Tour U and wrapped up in it because it's so important. And obviously everyone's paying attention to it. And so it also is kind of like determines your job, but I think it's important to try and focus on each day and how am I going to get better at golf this day? And then, you know, hopefully by when you're done playing college golf, you can, you know, see and be like, okay, there we go. Like I got top five, or, you know, maybe you didn't, but you know that like I was really focused every day and I did pretty much all I could to get better. And yeah, so that's kind of what I focus on.
So what does that daily process look like?
When we're in season or even out of season, usually before each day, I'll plan out my day just like, you know, usually by the hour or whatever, like I'm going to wake up this time and then I'm going to hit balls from like 9 to 11:30, and then I'm going to putt for an hour and a half and then go lunch. So I'll have like a rough estimate of what my day is going to be like. And then I've gotten better at like, when I first kind of started doing it, it's hard to kind of make those times. Sometimes something comes up or whatever. So just being able to adjust on, you know, on command, if you have all of a sudden you have a doctor's appointment and you're like, oh shit, I was supposed to be like putting right now, but like just being able to adjust. So that's kind of, that helps me a lot. It also just kind of takes like, you don't have to think about as much. Like you already know what you're going to do. Like, all right, well, last night I'm going to go to the gym right now. So that's just what I'm going to do. So you don't like, when I don't end up doing it the night before, I'm kind of like, oh shoot, like I need to figure out what I'm going to do today and what, how am I going to like get better? But when you take some time out of your day to kind of think about how I can improve the next day and write out a plan, it's really helpful for the next day, and it's easier to kind of just navigate your next day.
That makes sense. When it comes to the off season, you know, you mentioned that you were practicing because winter time, obviously not as much because the weather's tough, but you're still in the garage working. And then also you're going for lessons over in LA. Let's talk about the upcoming lesson you're going to have. What are you going to focus on? Like, what is the focus when you're, you know, in between the fall and the spring? What are you going to be, is there anything in particular you're going to be focusing on? Or is there going to be going in, hitting some golf balls, and then seeing what we got to work on?
Yeah, it's probably like a little bit of both. Sometimes like seeing, I've noticed at least in the past, like a lot of times, like at least with George, because he's farther away from me, like I always reach out to him and we'll talk back and forth. But like sometimes you get into a bad habit of like, you only see your coach kind of when things are bad. And so like that's kind of what usually I've been doing, is like things start going south and I've had like four bad events or three bad events. And I'm like, oh man, like I don't know what's going on. And then you see George. So I think it'll be, sometimes I think seeing him and just kind of seeing what he sees and is good, just because, you know, you go and fall into bad habits and eventually those, you know, create bad results. And sometimes you can't see it just through a camera. And so, you know, like I'm going to trying to focus on seeing George and just help, you know, making sure he is on the same page with me of what he sees in my swing. And I think that'll be good. So really just kind of, it'll probably be like, kind of go there, see what he sees. Tell him like, okay, yeah, my driver's been a little weak this season. I need to work on that. Do you see anything special? Is there anything like you think we could do to increase clubhead speed? Little things like that. And then, you know, usually with George, there's always something that like I had no idea about, or like something that he sees that I'm like, oh man, like good thing like we came and like saw him, because that would be a huge mistake if like, you know, I didn't realize it. So yeah.
How have you noticed your clubhead speed change? I know you mentioned that, or have you noticed it?
Yeah, I mean, especially when I first started seeing him, I started gaining some speed. And then, you know, it's like a lot of times when I go and see him, just mention like, oh, like, is there anything with clubhead speed you could do? And like, he'll have some like trick. Like one time I was trying to get faster clubhead speed, and he had me try like this, kind of like what Kyle Berkshire does when he long drives. He does like a little rock back and forth in his foot. And then as he gets to his back foot, he'll wind back. And so like I started messing with that, and all of a sudden I gained like 3-4 miles an hour. Obviously that's like unrealistic on the course, because you probably lose a lot of control. But in terms of like improving clubhead speed and like hitting a new record, like, you know, that was super helpful. So little things like that is he's really good about. And yeah, he can just find like small things that'll get you 1 to 2 miles an hour here and there. But yeah.
Do you work with him for everything, top to bottom, putting, short game, full swing, or what does that setup look like for you?
I don't really have a short game putting instructor. I had seen people in the past, and like my
My dad likes to, he likes Stan Utley for putting. Just, he kind of like watches videos of him. So like I've tried some of his stuff, but I've never gone, I don't have one right now. For putting, I feel like I have a really good grasp of kind of what I need to do to putt well and what processes that takes. And I feel like my putting and short game are usually the best parts of my game. Especially the Shriners, my putting was huge. But yeah, as of right now, George is just like swing coach. But like I'll ask him about stuff if I'm curious.
You've mentioned your dad a few times, and it sounds like he's like pretty involved in helping you become a better golfer. Is he an instructor himself, or what is his level of expertise?
No, he is not an instructor, but he just loves golf. And he has spent like hours just watching like George YouTube video. Like he knows like George's swing, you know, pretty well. Like he's helped like some of my friends' golf swing. Like my friend's dad will be like, oh, like what's going on here? Like, do you see anything? And then my dad will be like, oh, well, maybe it's this. And then George will be like, oh yeah, like that's what I would have said. And I think he just has that because he's just like, you know, been with me for most of my lessons. And also he's watched, you know, tons of videos and he's watched a lot of golf. But other than that, he really doesn't have, he's not like an instructor or anything. But he's kind of watched me play golf since I was five. So he knows a lot about like kind of my tendencies and stuff. So my dad, he doesn't really get to see me play much golf now, but we'll talk on the phone a lot if, you know, or something's wrong or if he's just curious about like, oh, how did the tournament go? What mistakes did you make? And so, yeah, he's kind of just like, also like when George isn't there, he'll be like, okay, well, I'm seeing you do this. Like, I think, and then we'll message George and he's like, yeah, I agree. I think you're doing this wrong. But yeah,
when it comes to the next couple years for you, obviously the focus is to get status to the PGA Tour U. And if not, then obviously there's Q School. There's lots of opportunities in front of you. What do you think? Where do you think your game stands? You've had some tests at Barracuda and the Shriners, and there's going to be plenty more tests against PGA Tour caliber players. Where do you think your game stands in regard to that? And what do you think you need to work on in order to not just get there, but then maintain that status and improve while on the tour?
My driving has been really good in the past, but it's just been kind of struggle as of like, you know, it's just kind of my weaker spot in my game. It's usually I'll have like a couple big misses that'll cost me, but I saw a really good improvement at the Shriners, and so I've seen improvements, but I think that's just going to take some work of just getting it dialed in to where it needs to be. And then, you know, I think obviously getting everything better, irons, putting, chipping, that's obviously a given, but I feel like my short game is pretty much there. So just kind of trying to find little things there that I can improve on. But I think outside of that is course management, making decisions, just kind of learning a lot of how I can try to, you know, manage my game and score the best I possibly can. Because, you know, obviously it's so easy to just make the wrong decision or the wrong club choice. There's so much that goes into making the right choice and giving you the highest percentage chance of the best score. Also, you know, taking your medicine when you need to is huge, but it's obviously very hard in the moment. I think that's going to be some of the bigger things that I'll have to work on. It's really is course management and driving. But obviously, you know, to be at the level of like a Xander Schauffele or Scottie Scheffler, you know, everything's going to have to get better. So, yeah.
You talked a lot about your individual goals with PGA Tour U and this upcoming summer. But what kind of team goals do you and your teammates have for this upcoming spring?
I mean, obviously, I think we obviously want to win a national championship. I think last year we had a good team, but we just didn't have, like, you know, as much talent yet as we needed. A lot of our guys were younger that are, like, you know, like Jack Turner and Parker Bell, you know, were younger. And then, you know, obviously we had some older guys as well, but I think we just lacked a little bit of talent. But we still, you know, almost got it to the match play top eight. But this year I feel like we have enough talent to where we can compete and win one. You know, I feel like with the Nationals, if you can just get into match play, you really have a good chance because, you know, you may not have to be the best team on paper, but, like, match play is different animal, and sometimes doesn't reward, like, the best team, but, like, at the same time, it you know, probably rewards the most deserving team just because it, like, in match play is so mentally, like, grueling. You have a lot of ebbs and flows. So I think, you know, if we can get into match play, I think we have a great chance. And obviously SECs as well. Similar format there, the top eight getting into match play. And so I think those are, you know, two obvious goals. I think our team is probably going to be one of the hardest working teams in college golf. I know last year Coach Deacon kept saying that he's never had a team that worked as hard as us last year. And I feel like we're going to bring that same energy this year as we've already done in the fall. And yeah, so I'm excited for that. And I think we're going to have a really good spring.
So you talked about match play being like a mentally kind of grueling thing. Could you give some advice? Because you've had, for listeners that don't know, you had some match play success this summer winning the Western Am. Like, what keys did you lean on to get through that pretty insanely hard match play bracket?
Yeah, there was a lot of match play kind of at the higher level amateur events. I got to play the Palmer Cup, which was in Ireland. And that one, every match I had played came down to the last hole. And so, you know, it's different because, you know, when you play in match play, you're like, if it's a close match, it's going to feel like you're competing in stroke play to win a tournament, which is different because in stroke play, usually you have to wait till the fourth day to feel those, like, nerves and, like, you know, kind of jitters, but you'll get it right away in match play if it's a close match. And so I think, you know, for me at the Western, especially, that the matches, you really, for me, what I like to lean on is just kind of exuding, like, confidence with, like, body language. Cause, like, you know, deep down, maybe I'm nervous and, like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to win this match. Like, you know, this is a really good player that I'm playing against. You know, this is just thoughts that'll go through your head. Like, oh, I think I'm going to lose. But, like, if you're kind of exuding, like, good body language and, like, your shoulders are back, your chest is out, you are trying to make yourself, you're kind of trying to trick your mind into thinking, like, you're the man. And, like, so that's worked really well for me, especially, you know, pre-round. And also when you start, you know, having a couple bad shots, you lose a couple holes, like, you know, making sure you have good body language, it's just going to, like, basically lean, it's going to give you the best chance to, like, get out of that, like, bad mental state. Cause, you know, if you're slumping your shoulders, you're looking down, like, it's only going to, you know, make it worse. So I found that to be really helpful. And also just, you know, like, reminding yourself that this is kind of like the feelings you're going to feel in match play is kind of what you want to feel. And, like, it's, you know, it's something you're going to remember, those moments of, like, when you're in the pressure moments and, like, when you, you know, pulled through and, you know, won the tournament, when you, like, maybe you had some bad thoughts in your head, but, like, just thinking to yourself, like, you know, this is what I'm supposed to feel and this is what's going to, like, come with winning big events. And, but I think the number one is really the body language for me.
Absolutely. As we talk about the future, we've talked about some about the Western Am and some of the past. I think one thing we haven't talked about is kind of a little bit farther in the past. I know that I've read a blog post you've read on it. Obviously, I've read some headlines about part of it. You're a really good golfer. went to play golf in college, but during that you had a few challenges and trials. I don't know if that's something you want to talk about, but I know it's a cool story and it's encouraging for other people here.
Yeah, I was my freshman year of high school. It was, you know, obviously unexpected. I was playing in a tournament and I was warming up and kind of like did a stretch and like felt like some tightness in my left armpit. And I was like, that's like kind of weird, like kind of didn't think much about it. And then kind of the next month I started noticing it getting much worse. Like my left armpit started dead skin. I would take my shirt off after like a round of golf and I would have dead skin like all in my like inside of the shirt. And I'm like, well, that's like really weird. And so I started having to take Advil to numb the pain just because it was too painful to play without it. And then eventually, like, my mom just got really worried and she was like, I think, you know, we need to go to the urgent care and like just look at this, check this out. And we originally thought it was like a cyst. So then they did a biopsy and it was actually pretty much just an empty hole in my left armpit. And they did a biopsy on some cells and found they were cancerous. And so then we were told that like he has cancer. And then it took probably like really a month and a half before they could figure out what type it was, just because it was such a rare kind. The kind that I had was, it's lymphoma, but it's common in adults. And the survival rate's roughly like 50%, but then there were really only about like 10 to 20 kids around the world who had ever had it. And so, but the good thing was the survival rate was like 90% from what they had seen. And so they finally kind of figured out that I had had that kind. And then I went through around 7 months of treatment where I would go into the hospital for a week and then go home for 2 weeks. And so I had to do 6 rounds of that. And so during the week, they just give me chemotherapy and pretty much just sit in bed and I would just play like Fortnite or video games, watch YouTube. But it was not a very fun time. You know, a lot of stuff was painful and whatnot. But the good thing was, is kind of right when my treatment had started, I really wasn't able to play golf for about a month and a half, 2 months, just because the pain was too much with my left armpit. But right when treatment had started, it cleared up right away. And I was able to swing the club again, which was really cool. It allowed me to kind of like get outside during treatment for the next couple months and get outside and have fun.
Last question we ask every golfer is the same. And for you, we'll do a two-parter. One, the first part is, if you go back to yourself as a junior golfer and tell yourself just one thing, what would that one thing be? And then the second part is, if you could tell a junior golfer just one thing, what would that one thing be?
I think like there's a point in like a junior golfer when like, because I had always taken golf seriously, but like serious is like kind of like, you know, like for me now, I take it obviously much more seriously where I'm like creating a day plan. You know, you have like a lot more scheduled stuff so like you're kind of treating it like your job. But as a junior golfer, you're just out with your buddies having fun. And I don't think that's a bad thing. But I think I would just tell myself, you know, it's going to be a lot of work to like get to where you want to be if that's really what you want to do. And so I would say, you know, it's going to take, you know, pretty much almost everything you have to get to where you want to be. So you need to pretty much just kind of fall in love with the process is just what I would tell myself. And like, I think there is a bit of luck involved with that, you know, like whether you really love golf and are motivated to do it. And because if you really don't love it, like you're not going to find yourself practicing it all hours of the day. But, and I think that I would tell the same thing to a junior golfer is, you know, if you want to be the best and you want to make it to the PGA Tour, or you just want to play college golf, it's, you know, even then it's still going to take a lot of work. And
you know, sometimes you won't be able to have, you know, you won't be able to go play with your buddies. You got to go and practice your swing or work on something else that won't be as fun. But in the long term, you just got to think like, it's going to help me reach my goals. So I would just tell that to them.
Perfect. Well, we appreciate it. Where can people find you on social media, follow along with you, etc.?
On Instagram, it's just ian.gilligan. That's pretty much the main page for all my golf stuff.
Excellent. And if you're trying to find us on social media, you can find us on Twitter/X @TournamentCode, on Instagram @TheTournamentCode. If you're listening on us right now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube, please like, subscribe, leave a rating, all that fun stuff. We appreciate you joining us. Look forward to diving in deeper of what it takes to play elite tournament golf.